I was just going to ask, are you using, because it sounds like you've got a great working functional model that makes perfect sense for yourself, but are you using your students and their results as the feedback loop to see if that model actually works on somebody besides Sifu Russ Smith?
Yeah,
are you
yeah.
using the student as the feedback model to be like, okay, they're getting this over here, but they, everybody that I have in this program is stumbling over this and stubbing their toe on it. Yeah. How do I redesign this to make it either more graspable, or do I break it down again into more digestible pieces, et cetera, et cetera? What are you working on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that actually started before the first book was released, because that information was all, the structure of the entire framework was essentially proven in a series of workshops. So essentially I have weekend workshops here multiple times a year. People fly in. And so we do, you know, intensives, weekend intensives, where we go through the material. I make sure that we get people to understand it. We do our best and as quickly as possible to give both the theory and the hands-on examples, and get the feedback. So many, many cycles of that have occurred. I've probably done 15 of those workshops over the last few years. And then, more style specific versions of those as well. Mm. So basically from the top down theory concepts, we developed a bridging level one and bridging level two courses where we basically have a relatively style agnostic set of training drills. You know, each bridging one and bridging two, they're each almost like 100 drill variations that
Ooh,
teach first
sweet.
First the outside gate, which is safer for beginners, and
sure.
then the inside gate, which is more dangerous, but faster to the solution if you can make it work. And then I'm working with one of my teachers now on a series of curriculum for takedowns, unbalancing and takedown material. And then lastly, I'm working on kind of a teacher's manual right now for all that kind of that high level stuff that we were talking about before, those four pillars and that kind of thing. But yeah, so going, I mean, you have to go through that loop multiple times with different people because we all have different preferences for bottom up or top down thinking, right? So some of us understand better by describing the forest. Some understand better by describing each individual leaf. And so, you know, you just have to meet people where they're at and try to be a good teacher and be a good communicator and listen to, what they understand and don't, and really try to craft your message better, because teaching is just a specialized form of communication, right?
Yeah. Well said.
Thanks.
Owen?
I had a question about, the different styles that you studied, and maybe, so I know, you know, in some cases, people, when they go from style to style, they may be looking for something specific or, something related to, something that they've experienced before. And they're trying to, you know, they're trying to identify or look for something.
Yeah.
And, or sometimes you run across a good teacher and you're like, okay, wait a minute. This is a good teacher, and I'm not as worried about what they're teaching as opposed to just the fact of being a good teacher. Or I've also had the experience of having kind of both, you know, having some of each. And I was wondering if, you know, in terms of when you're looking at different styles that you've studied, if any of those factors had driven any of your decisions to continue studying with them or to study something new.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That great question. And great points you make there, because why we start something is not always why we stay with it, right? So,
amen.
You know, I'll give you a few examples. You know, I trained Filipino martial arts again it's getting close to 40 years now, but I trained a little bit from many people, and you know, I met Mark Wiley. And he showed me his way of teaching. And I was just like, the one and only time in all my studies that I was like, all right, I'm never doing what I did before again. I'm doing this.
Sure.
Like, I'm just like, none of that stuff is cohesive in the way that this makes sense. This is my path to understanding over here, right? So that was a real unique experience for me, and it's something I would say hasn't happened elsewhere. I've had a lot of other small, wonderful successes in other ways. So for instance, great friend and my Gojiru teacher right now, just like one of those people who teaches intuitively, like teaches in a hands-on kind of master apprentice way, would never be excited about jumping up and writing a book, or doesn't like getting in front, hates being pushed to the front. But, you know, private, reserved people, I'm sure you all know some of these masters who you just are like, I just want that one, that it's that, like that meme, that like one conversation with the right teacher is worth, is worth 20 years of training, right? Yeah. So, you know, I'm really lucky to have, him in my life. And, you know, I've cut ties with plenty of teachers in the past who either, you know, through moral or financial or other frustrations, I won't go into, I would just say, just, I am, I'm old enough and, brave enough to just walk away from things that aren't good for me. And I hope that's true for a lot of people. So, you know, I think, if it doesn't serve you, it doesn't serve you. And, you know, life is short. And, if people aren't, doing things for your best interest, or at least, you know, if you can't walk in the same direction, then walk away. And so I've had lots of those, and they've all been learning experiences, and some of them have cut off access to certain things, but in the end, it's for the best, you know? So yeah, I've had a lot of great experiences. You know, I've met some of the most amazing people in my life through martial arts, and I've also met some of the weirdest people that I hope to never meet again.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. I'm coming back at you, Sifu.
Sure.
You know, I tried to think about things that all three of us, even though your systems are completely different than what Owen and I train, and then I'm the only Wing Chun guy over here. I was trying to think of similarities between all those systems, and I would say that you guys have trained the power development methods, or pulling out the power pieces, much, much longer than I have. But something that the Wing Chun lineage, which I feel pretty, you know, grateful to be with Sifu Mayer, and then, you know, you with a lot of your five ancestors boxing, and, you know, the Filipino, the stick arts and stuff like that, and even some of the Pakme, and then Owen, especially with the Xingyi and the Bagua, they have a lot of two-man sets. A lot of two-man sets. And a lot of, not just sets, but if you really start to understand what those two-man sets are, that's where a lot of the tactic, the drill, the power, and all those training methods really, really start to develop in isolation. And then hopefully if you're in a deep system, or if you're smart enough to figure it out, you can take that isolated little petri dish, if you will, and start to mix it with other things. And all of a sudden you're adding on footwork with it, and it's becoming an entry method, or it's becoming, you know, an evasional method or tactic, if you will. Do you think that that might be one of those, if you will, missing links or missing training modalities and a lot of folks that come to you? And do you think that maybe that is a way that's being overlooked, by a lot of the general public? As a matter of fact, you know, like Xingyi, not only do we have like little drill sets like that, but we have long two-man sets, you know, and it's less that there's people that are fighting each other, and it's more like they're equally countering each other. It's like we're, here's an answer to this and here's an answer to that. And it's more like that cooperative, I don't want to say dance, but in an interesting way, it is. There's a cooperation in there. And then when that cooperation breaks down, that's usually when you're finding your holes or doorways to enter, for application or technique. Yeah. What do you think about that, Sifu?
Yeah, wow. That's a really, really deep topic. And I think you've hit on really the key to everything. Like everything else is preparation for that in my mind, right? I mean, that is the skill development, channel through which we have in our curriculum, right? So the two-man training methods are where the rubber hits the road. And so, you know, one of the early things that I did was I really took this huge survey of all these two-person drilling methods, Jeet Kune Do, Wing Chun, Okinawan Karate, like everything I could find, you know, and I've been on the internet since it was accessible. So I've been trying to, you know, build a giant library to really do the analysis. And so I've got a few like really strong opinions on pieces of that and other parts of it. I think it's super important, right? So let me take the part that might sound negative first and throw that out there. I have a love-hate relationship with long two-person sets. So, the love-hate comes from, the fact that the thing you are training the most is to not finish the fight.
Mm.
That's my frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You can gain many wonderful things through two-person training, even long memorized sets that are not random. You can gain a lot of timing, range, awareness of body posture, reading angles and energy and preparation and intent. So many good things you can gain. But if it's counter for counter, you are training to perform only one of the two most important things you can do, which is stop the person from trying again. So the most fundamental, when I went reductio absurdum to the simplest concept I could come up with from a strategy among all arts from a self-defense perspective, basically it was we define self-defense as one two-part problem, which is meant to be solved in one timing. The two parts are stop him from hurting me and stop him from trying again. If in a long drawn out form, we stop the person from hurting us, but we don't stop him from doing it again, we haven't effectively countered.
Yes.
So essentially the concept of Lin Sil Dai Dar from Wing Chun is not in play if you simply defend and then counter on a second beat. So that's my real challenge with that. Now, I really had this wonderful epiphany about how you could construct the utility of these things. Now, for performance reasons as well, right? They make wonderful demos. There's lots of other good stuff, attributes-based, you can use them for. But attributes, that's body development and body coordination, not skill development, right? So that's part of my longer answer is everything's good if you're using it for the right reason and you know why.
Mm.
Right.
Context.
Context is everything.
Yep.
100%. So let's say you took one of these like Katori Shintaru, right? If you're familiar with this, Don Draeger's Budo art, right? The wonderful video of Otake Sensei demonstrating one of their two-man sets. Vicious, beautiful, scary two-person set with Boken. These guys are going at it. It's crazy. You watch them. And then he describes, he slows it down. He's like, okay, here's what's really happening. And he changes the range and the targeting of every technique is different.
Ooh, that's sweet.
And he goes, oh, okay. Now this thing, which was first a hit to the sword and a parry movement and then a counter here, was really a hit to this target, which would have killed him immediately. So I think it's helpful. And this is the way that I teach the few long two-man sets that I still maintain. In addition to all the value for body coordination, body development and attribute development, I also make sure the students are engaged in the mental process of identifying how at every movement they could and should finish the fight with minor change. Often just changing ranges and targets.
That is amazing. I'm going to take that 5-minute beautiful explanation and almost dumb it down to the point where you guys might throw something at me. You ready? Because Owen's close enough that he probably could hit me. That reminds me of somebody watching these long two-man Shingi sets. And then at the end of it, they're like, what did you think? It's like, okay, how do you fight with that?
Well, because it was the blocking set, this was an interesting thing. One of my karate instructors figured out years before mm-hmm. I understood what he was teaching me. We had a two-man set for one of our Gojiru kata. And he said, okay, well, you know, that the base, the thing everybody's doing, we call the base bunkai. Bunkai means to separate and analyze, right? To separate yep. and solve. Bun is like an inch or a minute, and kai is like the process of solving a problem. He said, so what I'd like you to do is at every movement, there are other levels of this. So then we're going to have the punching bunkai. So every time you would normally block, now you insert a hand attack. Next level, every time you do a block, now you insert a kick. Now every time you do a block, you insert a throw. Every time you do a block, you insert yeah. a lock. And I didn't realize he knew what ti-da-shuai-na was because he's a karate guy. Pretty cool. Took a yeah. long time for me to realize he knew that. And then the fact that he had inserted ti-da-shuai-na in as a solution at every aspect was like, well, he's basically recreating what the Katori guys had done. And
absolutely. So yeah.
I just think it's a really nice formula. And speaking of formulas, again, when we're talking about like theory and example, now I kind of stole this wording from the Juklum, the Southern Mantis guys, because they use the word formula a lot. I like it because what I want to teach students is formulas, not answers. Hmm. And a theory, you know, a principle might be a little too vague. A formula is a little more actionable. And an example might be the results of something that is spit out by the formula, right? So, Randall, I really appreciate you putting me in touch with your teacher. We've been chatting, and I read his book, and I really appreciate you making that introduction. And he and I are definitely more tightly like-minded in terms of our kind of engineering background and that kind of stuff. So a lot of the way he describes things makes a lot of sense to me.
There was a quote that I use from C.P. Mayer all the time. He talks about form, and you're talking about formula. And this kind of goes along with that. And he's like, form without function is meaningless.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a beautiful form, but unless you know what you're doing. And that's the fascinating topic too, is, you know, what is a form? Have you ever taken a look through that lens? Because my goodness, I mean, you know, are you using Jikbu as your first form in the Pakme yeah. that you guys use?
Yes.
Which is kind of a, mm-hmm. Would you say that that's a, its own mutated Sanchen, or do you think that it's kind of really
100%? It fits yeah. that role. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in that and space because it's a body development form. It's not a fighting form, right? So,
right. A little bit like, the Wing Chun Sunim Tao, you know, looking, you know, watching me do that. And everyone's like, well, how do you fight with that? I'm like, okay, well, let's look at what's going on, you know, behind the curtain here. What are we actually trying to develop with this form? I've actually mentioned to people that it reminds me a little bit of Ichuan. Yeah. And everyone's like, well, how could you make a comparison there? I'm like, well, it's almost like a long Jibin Gong. Mm-hmm. Because what's not moving? Your stance and your posture. Mm-hmm. And you're moving your hands. And you're mm-hmm. also learning zone defense, if you mm-hmm. will. You're mm-hmm. also learning the angles of the hands and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you're developing a great structure. Structure. The stance and the posture development.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Structure is a good word for that, right? Structure, form, like the concept of a form that's primarily around structure. And I think that is the Sanchin concept in most Southern Chinese arts. This is your basic power platform, breathing and posture, typically kind of wrapped up in that. And one thing that discuss it because I'm not very knowledgeable in Northern martial arts. It was helpful for me to have this discussion with Will over on Monkey Steals Peach because he helped me understand that Northern martial arts often keep the Qigong separate from the rest of the art. Whereas a lot of Southern arts have the Qigong built into the Samchen form, from the start, right? So it's a little different.
Would you say your Sanchen form has layers of teaching in it and layers of depth? Because, you know, I mean, you look at, you know, when Owen showed me Pichuan, that was one of the weirdest damn things. And this is real time. One of the weirdest things as a student I'd ever seen in my life, because I had learned, some of the external forms in PacMe. I had the Three Gates form.
Cool.
And then I had done Flower from the Lee family. And then I had kind of done their Jikbu a little bit. I wound up learning that later, but I also learned the Southern Dragon form. You know, like I think he kept what, three external forms from those previous masters. Yep. Yep. So I had learned those, and those were cool because those were like 70 or 80 moves.
And I'm like,
I feel like I'm doing Kung Fu now.
Yeah. Instead of Southern Shaolin, right?
Instead of my stupid Wing Chun form where I'm sitting there in place, you know, I'm like, this isn't Kung Fu. I even think that today, but I still love it. But Owen shows me Pichuan and it's three moves on one side. And it's three moves on the other. And I'm like,
the same three moves on the other side.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it just repeats itself. And he's like, yeah, if there was a road to the moon and you could breathe out in outer space, you could do that form of the move, turn around and come right on back. And so the whole concept of what a form is and what a kata is, that kind of went to a different place in my mindset. And then what was fascinating too was, those three moves, Owen was able to be like, okay, here's the first layer. Okay, now you've been here for a few months. Okay, now here's the second layer of this form. Okay, now you've been here for a year or two. Now here's the third layer. And so it's the same thing, but your lenses that you're looking at it are different. Maybe it's the Hubble telescope. I can't think of the new one right now, but I'm just going to use the Hubble. Maybe it's that macro lens that you're looking at, or maybe it's the electron microscope. Yeah. And you're looking at the micro lens on how to look at this form. Yeah. And so he gave me all these different functions. Okay. Are you developing power? Here's how you develop it in that form. Are you developing coordination? Here's how you develop it in that form. Are you working on, you know, are you thinking about this? Are you thinking about that? And so every stage, it's the same form, but it's not. Yeah. It really is going into that different river. And so I was wondering, is your Sanshin layered like that? Cause you're going to introduce that new student. Here's layer one. Now here's layer two.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When I teach Sanshin from a Goju perspective, let's say I'll teach the shape. Then I'll teach, the breathing. Then I'll teach the tension. And those are just the first three layers, right? So you just have to start slowly enough to give people things to not, create, paralysis in the student, right? You can't have too much for them to work on at a time. And you know, the way you were describing that, it really brought to mind this process that is like, the distillation process, right? We've talked a lot about cross training and, you've talked about Yichuan and Xingyi. And I see, you know, through my lack of knowledge, I'll just make some statements. Xingyi seems to me to be a distilled system, right? It's a distillation. It seems to be a well constructed, tightly, I don't even know the right words. It's not huge and fat flowery and trying to be a million things, right? It seems to be very focused. Yeah. From an external perspective, right? And I think that's an interesting part of the journey in a single art or in cross training is we get very hungry when we're in a certain phase in our life and we want to go learn every form and every way of doing things and every drill and I want to learn every weapon and I got to go learn five branches of the same art. Well, I learned Wing Chun. It's a small system, but it's only six forms, but I learned five different branches of it. So now I've got six times five. So now I've got a lot of stuff. But then at some point in your life, you go, you know what? I don't need all that because I can now understand it differently and I can distill the understanding in my brain and in my body. And I can start to make it my own and really, really digest this meal. And then, And then you take on students and then you try to feed them the distilled essence and it's too bitter and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And, oh man. And then you go, oh, well, they need training wheels. I got to make training. Oh no, all the training wheels were given to me before I took them off. Hold on. Let me go grab the training wheels again. So I think it's a fun portion of the process, both internally and, how we approach our students because we're on different cycles. We're, we're distilling and they're consuming, and then they're distilling and we're consuming if we're continuing to grow as teachers. So I think it's a fun thing to try to figure out and to try to manage. And, but I think if you're really studying, not just training or practicing, I'm really in the interest of trying to get my students to own their own training. I really want them to discern the difference between practicing or drilling and studying, because practicing or drilling is doing what I told them to do, and studying is you take the radio apart and you try to put it back together and see if there's extra pieces. Like you gotta make it your own. And that's your own shadow boxing. It's your sparring. It's recombining the drills. It's trying to break things, trying to, in Five Ancestors, we have a great saying. It's called turn victory into defeat, or turn defeat into victory, turning defeat into victory. And the idea is put yourself in all the bad places you can imagine. You don't start everything from your baijong. Don't start everything from a ready position. Start from an arm lock. Start from, you know, on one knee. Like, figure out ways to make it work. And that's how you really study what you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So does that process for you ever, do you find that there is a place where you naturally go, okay, you know what? I've taken apart and then put back together this piece, this concept a number of times, and you feel satisfied with it? Or is there something else that maybe you feel like you're missing and you need to go back, or is something in between?
I think it's got to be somewhere between. Owen, I feel bits of satisfaction where some work is kind of done, like when a book is finished, you can put it out and say, please use this. Mm-hmm. And when you understand that, or you feel you understand it, let's have that next conversation. Because, in the interest of time and consistency, I think it's important that you figure out a way to leverage yourself as a teacher. Because again, part of my goal is to get some of these traditions to survive. For my part, the ones that need my help, some don't, and that's great. I used to have a real reluctance to accept the idea of indoor students and outdoor students, or withholding things from people, because I actually don't really like the idea of keeping secrets. I've found through this entire process of going, you know, technique to principle based is, I can give all the best stuff on day one, and it's still going to take people 10 years to understand it fully.
100%.
So what reason would there be for me to hold back, right? However, now I'll say this. The flip side of this is, if I've given you the work, if you understand it, but you haven't done it, don't bother me about the next thing, because you haven't earned it. You're not ready for it. Like, and I don't say that to be mean. I just, like, I don't have enough time. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't, like every teacher, I don't want to teach the same white belt shit my whole life. And so I get that whole indoor outdoor thing from that perspective. If I took the time, the weeks and months and years to write this stuff in a book, read the book, do the work, do your part, own your training, and take on your part of the responsibility. Cause I'm not going to ask you to pick up three corners of the thing, mm-hmm. but, you know, you got to pick up your part. Like that whole Confucian concept of like the teacher picks up one corner and the student picks up the other three. Sorry. Yeah. I cannot fall in line with that. The teacher has the bigger responsibility, because the sender of a message in any communication scenario has the responsibility for determining if the message was received. The receiver cannot be the one that says it's accurate. They don't have the ability to. So why put that on the student? Right.
Yeah.
But the student has to do a part of it. So I would say that's my current kind of feelings on the whole indoor outdoor thing. I think there, at some point you have to say, look, I've given you your part. You either do it or don't. Like, some of my teachers know I haven't gone to the next level in the thing, and it's my fault because I haven't had the time or the focus, and that's on me, and I own that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Russ, what are you currently working on besides all this teaching in your own training? What are you trying to focus on in your own training right now?
Yeah.
Because I know at some point, you know, you've got a developed curriculum and question for you. How far do you think you're able to take people? Are you pretty sure you've got the standard introductions and then you can get them to an intermediate phase? Do you feel like you've got those couple levels and then, or are you still making the framework for the higher level and the higher functioning of those systems that you're teaching online? But I'm sure you've got to have your own work that you're trying to keep fresh and keep functioning for yourself.
Yeah. You know, I'm not getting any younger and I've got my own health challenges like a lot of us do. Right. So, you know, number one is, trying to do my best to, be healthy, stay fit, you know, lose weight, get stronger, be more supple, all those things that I need to do to stay active well into my late years and be a good example for my students. Those things are important to me. You know, continue to refine. You know, I'm more focused on my students from a training perspective in a lot of ways than I am on myself, but I'm still learning new things and enjoying that and really trying to make sure I understand things well enough that I can bring people to the highest levels that I can. My goal for a long time has been to make sure my students can all surpass me, in a fraction of the time. And that will be my goal. You know, part of it is just continuing to write. Part of it's continuing to teach workshops and teach, I'm teaching online as well so that it's as an adjunct, for when people can, periodically make it here physically. So, it's just a combination of taking care of myself, continuing to learn and study, under my teachers and be heavily focused on my students. And there's a lot of writing involved as well. So, yeah.
Right. Owen?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I'll keep this rabbit hole going.
All right.
Is there someone out there that you think that we should be looking at that you, besides your Sifu Mark Wiley, he's got some great stuff going on with his new podcast, Transformations, but is there some other folks that you think that are either under the radar or maybe they're in a whole different genre? I'll give you some examples. Somebody that I think is absolutely fantastic. If you're not familiar with this gentleman out of Canada, Coach Kevin Secours. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that cat. I'll send you some of his stuff, but I really like how he teaches. He's kind of come up. I don't want to say really come up with. He's had lots of years of training with it, but he is a lot like yourself. He's got years and years of great traditional martial arts. And, I want to say in the late '90s, he found Sistema and he fell in love with it. And he got out about the time that they were getting to the spiritual side of things. He's like, nope, no thanks. And so he's like, okay, I've got Okinawan, he does Okinawan, jiu-jitsu.
Oh, cool.
And he does some Kobudo. He's done some karate. He's done some kung fu. He's done some Arnis. He's done some Eskrima. He's worked with tons of these masters from Dan and Asanto to Tony Blauer before Tony Blauer invented the spear system. We're talking 25 to 30 years ago.
Cool.
And so he's worked with all these people and he's got a really functioning teaching platform. And then you've got people like, I'm a huge fan of Josh McKinney. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. He's 38. And I think you can listen to the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. That's his podcast. Great name for a show. Yeah. And it's funny because he talks like a coach.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but he'll talk about pace, timing, rhythm, position and tactics and mindset. I'm like, I'm learning something. I don't know Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right.
But I'm learning how he takes his information and use Western terms that we're all used to. Right. Cause you know, we have our specialized Chinese terms, our specialized Japanese terms, Filipino terms for yourself. Yeah. But we also have, you know, rhythm, timing, pace, function, you know, grip, all these things. Another guy, last one is, Fran Sands, my boxing coach. I love that gentleman. A true teacher and a true gentleman. He teaches over in UK in the rough neighborhoods and him and four other coaches basically teach for free, make sure those kids do their homework, get a good meal to eat and things like that, those kind of things. And he's a great, great boxing coach. He's got thousands of hours of free, like, well, maybe it's hundreds of hours, more like 300 or 400 hours, but he's got hundreds of free great boxing tutorials that are just some of the best I've ever seen in my life. Is there some folks out there, long-winded way to say it, share those people with you.
Sure.
Is there folks out there that you're like, oh man, nobody's paying attention to her over here, or nobody's paying attention to him over here?
Yeah. But yeah, there's a couple, that I can think of right at the moment. And I may need to follow up with you afterwards, for some others, but you know, he's not a kung fu guy, but my karate instructor is quite a huge influence on my life. His name is Marcus Davila. Highly, influential person in my life. I think he's a real hidden gem, in the martial arts world. Another, would be a friend of mine. His name is Alex Doe. He was a student of Kim Fu Mark. I think he's a great guy, and he shared some of his juklum with me. And, I think of him very, very highly. He's a high hand. One of my students, but also a teacher in his own right, is, Sifu Joshua Durham. He's an instructor in five ancestor boxing under the Kantekwan lineage. And he's a student of mine in White Eyebrow and a great close friend of mine. A few guys that are really important to me. Whether or not they'd be interested in, coming out more publicly, I think time would have to tell.
But very good.
Definitely would recommend. I really appreciate what you guys are doing, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and chat with you. I've really enjoyed the discussion.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
So usually, I, at the end of these things, I like to ask, you know, do you have anything that you want to promote, or do you want, or I mean, we'll put your website and we'll put some of those things, those resources in the show notes, but you know, if there's anything in particular.
No, really kind of you. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I have several books that I am continuing to, try to make sure people know about. The first book was called Principle Driven Skill Development. It's now available in multiple languages, including English, German, Italian, Dutch, and Spanish. So if anybody is interested in kind of a very high level generic, concept of around, principle driven, ways of thinking and training in martial arts, highly recommend that. If you're interested in five ancestor boxing, at all, I wrote a student manual. There's a volume one out. There will be a volume two out soon. It is a student manual, so it may not be for everybody, but it has some really interesting theory in here for people who are Southern martial arts stylists that might be of interest. And this other book that I have, it's called Overview of Fujian Taizu Boxing. This, for me, is such a special book because it's a small book, but it really is like secret kung fu manual shit. And so, like, for me, this is like movie stuff. Just, you know, when you think about all the tropes and all the movies, is somebody stole somebody's boxing manual and learned the secrets and then wanted to fight the teacher or whatever. I just, you know, I came across enough resources to be able to do this translation justice. I'm really proud of it. It's a small book, but I think it's really powerful in the way that it talks about Southern boxing. So anyhow, it's called Overview of Fujian Taizu Boxing. All those books are available on Amazon.com. And then, you know, if anybody's interested in Mariyoshi Kobudo or Five Ancestor Boxing, you can potentially engage with me online at BurinCon. And typically I'm on Facebook a fair amount.
Awesome. I'm not done with you. I've got two last questions, right, and then I'll let you get back to real life. I apologize.
No, please. Fire away.
Something that was unique about your Kobudo, and you mentioned this to Will, and I think it's something, the only other system that I know that does this, and Owen really helped me understand this, is the richness and the depth of Xingyi. Because when I got started to do the animals, I'm like, oh, I'm going to master all these animals, and I'm going to be great at all of them. He's like, well, you'll probably have two or three that you really can focus on. And you'll really want to tailor into. He's like, and then the other ones, if you feel like passing on the system, you'll need to learn those too, because each of your students, you know, what might work for you won't work for your student, but they might find an affinity. You know, maybe say you're not a monkey guy, but somebody else might be. And so there's the tailoring process, if you will. Could you tell it? Because I mean that tailoring process to the student.
Yeah.
I think it's something that a lot of people don't hear enough about. And I was blown away that you were, you had an Okinawan or Japanese system that did that. It was weapons based, but that teaching formula seemed almost devoid, or I had never heard of it in any Okinawan or Japanese systems. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. And maybe the stories are a little mixed up, just to clarify. So the Kobudo that we do is an amalgamation of Chinese and Okinawan arts. And it covers a whole broad spectrum of weapons. Like a lot of Chinese systems have the titular 18 weapons, right? So Mariyoshi Kobudo is a lot like that. Well, I think maybe the story you're thinking about is Gojiru. So originally in our style of karate, the story was that, Miyagi Chojun of Mr. Miyagi fame, had his teaching method originally was supposed to be that he taught each student Sanshin as body development and then one or two other kata or taolu that they would specialize in. And then upon his death, all of his primary students got together and shared the 12 total kata that he had taught. And now everybody in the system all tries to do all 12 kata. So interestingly, that story is very similar to what we have in our five ancestor boxing, which is five ancestors is Taizu, as I'd mentioned in that, that booklet, Lohan, Dazunchuan, Adamo respecting boxing, monkey boxing and crane boxing. So it's an amalgam of kind of the five most popular styles in the Fujian province over time. And because the style's so huge, it's on the order of the size of like a lot of Choi Le Foot systems, like 50 forms and weapons and all this stuff and dozens of two man sets and all this. So, you know, what we didn't hear in karate was how did Miyagi decide which form suited which individual? That knowledge, as far as we know, wasn't passed down. So we don't have the rubric that says tall guy learns this one, fast guy learns that one, short guy learns
that one.
Yeah. We don't have that, right? And so the nice thing about five ancestor boxing is we have more of that information. It's maybe not exactly cut and dry, but each of the ancestors is probably more like you just described, Xingyi's animals. You know, monkey is about adaptability and hitting the three levels. Crane is about whipping energy and evasion. Lohan is about evasion, but with boxing, whereas Taizu cuts right through the center, right? Dazunchuan is about developing the body, right? So with those aspects of the art being focused on those ancestors, you can work with the student to understand their interests and aptitudes and give them the ability to specialize past the core. So I've worked with my teacher to make sure that the teaching methodology for five ancestor boxing goes back to the old way, which is there's a core model where everyone learns the main five roads. And then from then you can pick and choose the ancestors that you want to specialize in and move from there. And everybody doesn't have to learn everything unless you really want to be kind of a lineage holder level instructor. And then you've got your work cut out for you, but that's up to you, right?
Very much so. And this is my last one. That's amazing. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for answering that. This is my last one. I think it's specific for you because when I wanted you on the show, I had read your book and I've got to say, I'm going to say that's one of the top five martial arts books that I've ever read. And, back at you. Thank you for the time and thank you for the effort and the work in it. I think something that's unique about listening to you, I've listened to a lot of your, from Facebook, your YouTube talks and things like that. And your teaching perspective really reminds me, it's different than Sifu Myers. But it really gets the student to engage and think to themselves for themselves.
Yes.
And through the system, through the lens of the system. As you hang up the show here and leave us, do you have, if you could have a message, not for the students, but for the teachers and these classical trained arts, maybe a teacher is burnt out. Maybe they're, looking for something new. Maybe they're just, it's my way or the highway. Maybe they're just so, you know, embedded in their own way of teaching, or, you know, maybe they're about to close their dojo down, whatever it may be. If there's one message that you could pass on, to some of us, because a lot of us are similar here in the West. We're teaching classical martial arts, whether it be from Japan, China, Indonesia, whatever it may be. Yeah. If there is a teaching message that you could give to everybody, what would it be?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the message is to figure out how you can come to terms with tradition. Figure out what your relationship is with the tradition that you're a part of. What's your role and responsibility, and how can you adapt so that you can take what is by its nature a conservation exercise and adapt yourself and your teaching methods so that you can help progress that so that it can survive into the future. Because if you turtle up and insist on doing things only the old way, then things will die in your hands. So that's my advice. Figure out your relationship with tradition and make the best of that.
Sifu Russ, thank you for your time. That was awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys.
We hope to have you on down the road, but thank you for your time today, and we look forward to conversing in the future. Have a blessed day, my friend.
You as well.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.